What is the Alter Rebbe telling us here? Davening is a unique time. In the universe, there is a certain energy that exists in the time of prayer. It doesn't necessarily mean we access that energy, or we tap into it, or we utilize it. We can decide to ignore it, to deny it, to divorce ourselves from it. But the potential exists. What is the energy that exists by davening? He calls it a sha'as meichin de gadlus, a time when the supernal divine intellect is in a sublime state. In Kabbalah, there is a term called meichin de katnus and meichin de gadlus. Meichin de katnus is when the meichin, when the intellectual faculties are in a state of katnus. Meichin de gadlus means when the meichin are in a state of gadlus. Katnus is small, of course. Gadlus is large. Which means meichin de katnus is when the meichin are not developed fully. They are in a lower state. And meichin de gadlus is when the meichin are in a sublime, higher state. Usually, that is one of the differences between the child and the adult, where the child experiences meichin de katnus. A child has a mind and, of course, utilizes the mind. But since these meichin are underdeveloped, so therefore, it results in certain attitudes and wants and expressions that are immature. As the Alter Rebbe mentioned, for example, in chapter 6, that a child gets angry over very minute, small things, because his meichin do not appreciate anything beyond that. So if he has this or he doesn't have this, having this creates major joy in his life. Not having this little toy creates sorrow in his life. Why? Not appreciating true significance and value of something, or non-significance value of something. An adult, however, supposedly has meichin de gadlus, where his meichin are more developed, and therefore he measures things based on their true value and significance objectively. Hence, his attitude towards them, the positive or the negative, also varies, alternates. But come to think about it, sometimes a katan has more meichin de gadlus than an adult. Huh?
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, why?
Because you find children who are in a higher state of consciousness as far as Torah is concerned than many adults are, and think like adults. And I've met them.
Okay. Come to think about it, what Alter Rebbe is saying is the indulgence of a person fully in the physical world and in physical pleasures stems from meichin de katnus. It stems from underdeveloped appreciation of what reality is all about. Because when one contemplates life, the universe, and himself on a deeper level, in a meichin de gadlus dika way, he comes to realize that ultimately, what is truth of all of existence is one reality. To cleave and to connect oneself with something that's not absolute, that's not eternal, that's not real, that's not true, stems from meichin de gadlus. At davening, there is an energy in the universe of meichin de gadlus. In the supernal worlds, the meichin, the cognitive faculties of godliness, are in the sublime state. And therefore, it evolves also in this world, that at that time, a human being can introduce into his life a certain dimension of meichin de gadlus. A ray of meichin de gadlus can enter into his consciousness. Now starts the work. This is the opportunity. Now starts the work. By the Beinoni, davening is a pivotal time. It's extremely significant. What is that time? What does that time mean for him? So the Alter Rebbe says, first and foremost, it's a time of deep contemplation, meditation. What does this meditation consist of? Meditation b'gdulas ein sev baruch hu. In the reality, gdulas, the greatness. Gadol ein sev baruch hu means the emes, the truth of ein sev baruch hu. We live in a world where the onslaught of materialism and the materialistic perception is so powerful that the Beinoni yearns every day to the time of davening. The time of davening is an opportunity where he can engage in contemplation and meditation, which will allow him to appreciate and come in contact with the divine reality. Those moments create a profound, powerful awareness, affirmation, identification, appreciation of the truth of the reality of Hashem and godliness. How often does a person have the ability to do this? Usually, our struggles to make ends meet and to live and to survive distract us. So therefore there's a time every day where the Beinoni enters into a state where godliness becomes a reality in his mind. And not only that, La'eris Hava, and that causes and arouses within him a love, an affection. It's not only an intellectual, abstract awareness. Rather, it becomes an emotional experience. We experience an ahava, a burning love to Hashem, which expresses itself and results itself in a desire to cleave to Him, someone you love, you want to connect to, and hence the resolution to engage in Torah and mitzvahs, which are the means through which one can cleave to Hashem. And this is the very concept of Krishma, the Alter Rebbe says. Start Krishma, what's it? Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and Baruch Shem are the two passages in which the Beinoni meditates upon the absolute, perfected, harmonious, eternal, emesdika reality of Hashem. That results in Vahaftas Hashem Elokech. You shall love Hashem b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshecha, which is the result of that type of awareness. And the continuation of the Shema is about the actual performance of mitzvahs, the most fundamental, basic mitzvahs of the Torah, as the order which the Alter Rebbe transcribes here, because as a result of that, he wants to cleave to him. Hence the resolution to involve himself in Torah and mitzvahs as a result of that avi. Then there are the brachas, the blessings before Shema and after Shema. Of course, before Shema we have two blessings, beginning with Yetzirah B'Yechashach Yisrael B'Yisakayil, then the second blessing, Av Asylum or Av Rabba, depends on the Nusach. And then there's the blessing after Shema, Gal Yisrael. That's Shema in the morning, and then there's Shema in the evening, has two blessings, preceding Shema, Hamayr V'Aravim, and Av Asylum, Av Am Yisrael, and then the two blessings following the Shema, Gal Yisrael again, and Hashkivenu. These, he says, are a preparation to Shema, as explained elsewhere. In chapter 49, the Alter Rebbe brings up an interesting question that's discussed in different places. These brachas are unique. Usually, before you do a mitzvah, you make a blessing. What's the nature of the blessing? An introduction to the actual performance of the mitzvah. So before one puts on tefillin, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam Asher Kedoshanu B'Mitzvah Zeh L'Haniach Tefillin. Before tzitzis, L'Zatev B'Tzitzis, or a mitzvah tzitzis, you put on mezuzah, L'Kvaya Mezuzah. So before Krishna, what should be the appropriate blessing? Something similar to that. No. Long blessings that deal with different ideas and concepts and realities. Yetzirah, we discuss the reality of creation and the angelic beings. Avarabba, Rabba Salem, we discuss Hashem's relationship with the Jew. The bracha following Shema Gal Yisrael, we discuss the exodus of Egypt and the salvation of the Jewish people and God's, Hashem's divine providence over every single individual Jew and the collective Jewish nation, and so on and so forth. What is the connection between that and Shema? So the Alter Rebbe explains in chapter 49 that this is a very powerful connection and content. In order to achieve that state of mind and heart, which is the whole content of Shema, we have to say these brachas, which are not just a robotic program of saying words. They are rather the introductory ideas and concepts that allow us to actually experience that experience that's demanded in Shema. And the brachas afterwards are there to internalize those concepts of Shema, make it a real reality in our life, to be there, embedded within us for the remainder of the day, until we do the next time Shema. And that's why the Alter Rebbe mentions Krishma's Midrashah, the brachas Midrabbanan. But why is it important to emphasize here? Because this conveys actually the whole concept. In the earlier generations, the Jew could enter immediately into saying Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and actually connect and achieve this awareness, and then experience this profound love. Why? For some reason, the godly reality was more transparent in the universe. Or if not transparent, at least somewhat translucent. With a little difference between them that we once discussed here, concerning the other extreme of reality, Klipas Naiga. And did not need all these preparations. Then there's the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan, of course, came in later generations and introduced the brachas, because we need this hachana. We need this preparation. It's not easy. You live in a world which is a world of klipa, it's a world of a shell, of husk, which obscures spiritual reality, godly energy. To enter into, to achieve this awareness, a person has to think and contemplate and toil with his mind and with his heart. It demands refinement, discipline, commitment, even intellectual. So the brachas are that instrument which allow us to get tuned in. The brachas convey to us messages and ideas that allow us to raise our consciousness and enhance our awareness significantly. I know this description of davening here in Tanya sounds alien and remote, unfortunately, to many Jews. But that's a result of, like many mitzvahs, Jews who even perform the mitzvahs do it very robotically, and sometimes with dogma, divorced from an inner true experience. But by the Beinoni, before davening and after davening, he's two people. Davening is not just, you know, a burden. You have to do it. You were educated with it. Comes into shul, gets on the tefillin, chaps up a davening and leaves. By the Beinoni, davening is the peak of the day. That's where he reconnects. The battery gets recharged. Shabbos is Shabbos. Shabbos is Shabbos. Shabbos is a whole day of the davening. How come there's no brachas in Krishma Shalamita? Krishma Shalamita is not this obligation, midereis, of saying Shema. Midereis is b'shach b'cha of kamecha twice a day, in the morning and in the evening. Vaz, then, when is then? At this time of davening, harash b'chal asmali. The evil in the left part of the heart, kafuf ubatel l'tayv hamispashet b'chal hayimani, is subjected to and is nullified before the goodness that spreads into the right part of the heart. May Chabad Shebemayach, from the Chabad faculties in the brain, HaMekusharim Bigdula Sein Seivorch, which are bound in meditation to the greatness of the blessed Ein Sof. At that time, the Beinoni also has Ra, in the Chol HaSmali, in the left side of the heart, there's a Nefesh HaBahamis, which is defined in Tanya as Ra, as negative, as evil. In the sense that it distances man from truth. So at that time, the Ra is subdued, it's nullified before the goodness, before the godly soul, which expresses itself in the Chol HaYimani as a from the Chabad and the Mayak, which the Chabad is now connected with the reality of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Beinoni enters such a state of union, of fusion with godliness and spirituality in his mind, in his intellectual experience, and then in his emotional experience, that the Ra is totally subdued. What does it mean, subdued? It's unfelt in the conscious internal structure of the Beinoni, the Ra is totally not being experienced. Avol acher hatfilah. This is b'shas davening. But after davening, b'istalkus hamichin de gadlus ein sevbaruch, when the intellect of the blessed Ein Sof is no longer in a state of sublimity, that energy of meichin de gadlus no longer exists in the atmosphere of the universe, harei hara chayzer v'neir b'chol hasmali. The evil of the animal soul in the left part of the heart reawakens. It's chov gechapt. He woke up. Before, he took a little nap for half an hour, for an hour, for 2 hours. Now he wakes up again. I finished my nap. I'm back. When he's sleeping, he's also there, but you just don't hear him. Yeah, he's taking his nap. When he wakes up, he starts running around, making a mess, and allowing us to hear that he's awake, he's alive and well. And what does that express itself in? And he, the Beinoni, once again, feels a desire for the lusts of this physical world and its delights. Because the Nefesh HaBahamis is undiminished. It's not been eradicated, has not been transformed, it exists. And the Nefesh HaBahamis lusts to Olam Hazeh, to this world and to all its pleasures, any type of pleasures, whether permitted, even forbidden pleasures. But that perception of life, which the Nefesh HaBahamis has, the Beinoni did not rid himself of it. You see, the perception of life in the Nefesh HaBahamis is not the perception of the Nefesh HaLukis. It's not only what they want, it begins with their whole attitude, their whole perception of what reality is. But the Nefesh HaLukis, what's reality, what's true? Anything that's connected to Hashem. That's what the Nefesh HaLukis therefore wants. The Nefesh HaBahamis, its perception of reality, and this we don't have to elaborate on, because what's our natural perception of reality? That the world exists, and I exist, and I want to be comfortable, and I want to be happy, and I want to be satiated. Anything that makes me happy, that's what I want. And the Beinoni has that perception, which comes from klipot, comes from the concealment of the husk. And after davening, the Beinoni experiences that taiva. Now, Alter Rebbe emphasized the time of davening, not the time of learning. And this is significant. When the Beinoni learns, or for that matter, when any Jew learns, we discussed in chapter 5 what occurs. Torah is the wisdom of Hashem, Chachmas Yishla Kadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem and His wisdom are one. When a Jew learns Torah and understands the words of Torah, he digests in his mind the wisdom of Hashem, which is one with him. And hence, the Alter Rebbe says, a unity, an extraordinary unity, which does not have its like in the physical world, is attained between the reality of Hashem and the reality of the human being. So when the Jew actually learns Torah, there is a yichud nifla, a wondrous union between Hashem and the Jew, and hence the great significance that Torah plays in the life of the Jew. The extraordinary role it has in the life of the Jew, and of course the Beinoni. However, that's not tefillah, and it doesn't achieve this specific thing. When you're learning Torah, you're learning about Shnayim Eichas and Betalis, two people, the beginning of Baba Metziah, for example. Gemara Baba Metziah. Two people who are holding onto a garment, and there's a major disputation between them. One says it belongs exclusively to me, the other one claims it belongs exclusively to me. And they go to the Jewish court, to the Bezdin, and the Mishnah and the Gemara discusses their arguments and their verdict and the rationale for the verdict and the reasons behind the verdict and ways you can dispute the verdict and so on and so forth. At that moment, if you're thinking about Gedula Saint Sev Baruch Hu, you're not going to understand the Mishnah. I promise you. It's a guarantee. You're not going to understand the Mishnah. You have to push a thing about two Jews who are arguing, as usual the case, and fighting over a talus. and they slap themselves to the rabbi, and they're disputing with each other, and this one accuses him, this one accuses his fellow this with these words, and this one accuses his other fellow the same thing, that he stole it. And everything involved in that. Because that's what the Chachma is, that's what the Torah is. Before learning, after learning, in middle of learning perhaps, the Jew can stop and create a certain awareness about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But tefillah, this is what tefillah is all about. This is the very definition of tefillah. There's an interesting, it just conveys it in a powerful way, there's an interesting Reb Chaim. The Rambam, Rabbeinu Moshe ben Maimon, in his Yad HaChazaka, in his Code of the Jewish Law, has Hilchis Tefillah, the Laws of Prayer. It consists of many and many of chapters, and there is a very famous contradiction, apparent contradiction, in the Rambam's words. In one place in Hilchis Tefillah, the Rambam discusses things that without them, davening is invalid. Tiras Hayadayim, one's hands have to be clean. And one of the things is Kavanas Halev. Person has to have kavana, intention. He has to be aware of what he's doing. He has to be cognitively attached, connected to what he's doing. That's one Rambam. Another Rambam, I think in Perek Yud, if I'm not mistaken, the Rambam discusses tefillah, the Rambam discusses the kavana, the intention that a person has to have concerning tefillah, and he says as follows, that when you do the Amida, which is what the word tefillah in the Rambam means, referring to the Amida, the first bracha, which is called Birchas Aveis, Baruch Ata Hashem, Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, which concludes with Magen Avram, that must have kavana. To the extent that if you didn't have kavana, if you didn't have intention while you were saying those words, you just said those words automatically, robotically, without attaching your mind to what you're saying, it's disqualified. You have to repeat the bracha. Concerning the other blessings of the Amidah, the Rambam says, of course, initially you have to have kavana, but even if you didn't have kavana, you can go by without it. So Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, in his Sefer Chidushei Rabbeinu Chaim Halevi al Rambam, one of the most extraordinary Talmudic minds of last century, asks the question, there's a clear contradiction in the Rambam here. In Perek Hey, the Rambam writes that without Kavana, the Tefillah is disqualified. In Perek Yud, he says that only Avos has to have Kavana, but all the other blessings, B'diyavad, are valid even without Kavana. So he explains that in his beautiful terminology, Trei Gavni Kavana Ika B'Tfilah. There are two types of Kavana in Tfilah. And the Rambam in these two chapters is addressing two types of Kavana. There is a Kavana understanding the actual meaning of the words. Atachayne Iladam Das, you grant a person perception. Pirush HaMil is understanding the words which you are saying. That's one type of kavana. But then there's another type of kavana, much more general, much more basic, much more fundamental. And that is the awareness that there is a God and you're relating to Him and you're communicating with Him. The awareness of Dalifnei Miyata Imid in this terminology. Gemara says, you have to know before whom you're standing. Is that kavana, the first kavana, the former kavana, is a detail. Intrinsic, important, significant, crucial. But nevertheless, it's a component. It's a component of davening. You're davening, you should know what you're talking about. Yeah, people daven for half an hour, 45 minutes. They don't understand half of what they're saying. Yeah, to push it, know what you're talking about. So it's an important aspect of tefillah, but it's a component of tefillah. But the latter type of kavana is not a component of tefillah. That is the very definition of tefillah. What is tefillah? What does davening mean? Saying words? Huh? Davening is all about creating a state of mind where you have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If that awareness doesn't exist, Reb Chaim says, you're not missing a component of tefillah. There's no heftz of tefillah. Words are absolutely secondary, as crucial as they are, significant they are. They carry within themselves a message. He says, if you don't have this general kavana, you're a misasik. Misasik means doing something with no relationship to yourself whatsoever, totally unintentional. Because it means you could be doing it unwillingly even. You just happen to do it. Your mind is totally somewhere else and you just happen to do something. That's what it is. It's not a concept of tefillah. And these are the two kavanas the Rambam is addressing. When the Rambam says in Perikah you need kavana salev, he means the general state of mind when you're davening, thinking about the reality of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and creating a relationship with Him. Even on an, of course, it begins with an intellectual one, a cognitive one. But there's a certain state of awareness. The words are a result of that awareness. The other kavana he's talking about is a specific kavana, Pirush HaMilos. So here is the difference between Birchas Avos and not Birchas Avos. So that's what tefillah is all about. And in the Beinoni's life, that's very important. Because as we shall see, since the Beinoni has a Nefesh HaBahamas, experiences a whole other type of perception and relationship with reality, what allows him to actually live a life which is so self-controlled? What secures the Beinoni? What type of security does he have that the animalistic impulses will not actualize themselves? What is the method that he uses? It's a powerful, some powerful method. It never actualizes itself. If he doesn't have it, mela. But he does have this dichotomy. He does have this struggle. So why does it never actualize itself? So this is what Altri Rebbe will discuss now. But a major secret of that is davening. Not just davening, the robotic davening. Davening that he describes here. The awareness that the Beinoni achieves by davening, the relationship he experiences at that time, allows him to secure and create a mental fortress that even later on in the day, that awareness and that relationship that he has created serves as a very powerful counterforce to the negative impulses and desires of the animalistic soul. And this is in detail what Alter Rebbe will address in the continuation of this chapter. You want to ask something? Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay, have a good day and a wonderful week.
Rabbi Jacobson delivers this weekly class on the Tanya each Sunday morning at Heichal Menachem in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn, New York. To order additional tapes or to receive the tapes weekly by mail, please call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076.